Today's daf Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Beit, and we are continuing on our quest to discover what exactly is considered to be the Hana'ah, that is Nesar, in a Neder, A, and B, what are the intents as to which Hana'ah we're talking about. Both of those issues have been very much the topic of the perek, which of course is the difference between somebody who's neder hanah, somebody who's neder ma'achal, somebody who's neder hana'at ma'achal, and then the assumptions of what kind of hana'ah is meant to be also, which got into the issues of bikur cholim, or whether it's a doctor, whether there's a lot to cure him, and so on. Now we have another very interesting question, and that is, once a neder is chal. Now I understand, let's say I want to make a neder that something is usur on me. Now, let's say I want to usur, I will not go into this house. I will not go into your house. Is there a difference between those two? If I won't go into this house, I don't know, maybe it's a haunted house or something. Or the guy believes that there's something inimical to him in that house. So then it ought to have nothing to do with who happens to own the house. And if the house is sold to somebody else, it would still be usur. If it's in the context of a fight between the people, and he says, I don't want to go into your house, it's pretty clear that if it belongs to somebody else, he couldn't care less. That's where he is ossering the house on himself. We understand that, of course, in the same way that he can make your house osser on him, he can make that house osser on him no matter who it belongs to. That's pretty clear. But how about the other way around? How about when he answers his own things on somebody else? That would seem to be an entirely different issue. When you answer something on somebody else, and we had this whole question, whether that is similar to Hegdash, in the sense that once it's usur, there's no way to make it mutter, unless we believe that in terms of if you hold like Rabbi Meir, then there's an idea that if you use konam to asr something, especially according to the Russians, it's the only way that you ever asr anything. Even if you don't say konam, it's still considered to be yadayim to konam. So then maybe once you make something asr, it's asr forever. So if I say my house is asr, and then I go on you, then I go and I sell the house, perhaps that house would remain asr, having once been asr. How about if I phrase it differently? How about if I say, my house is usur on you? And I make it quite clear that I just don't want you having any pleasure from my things. I mean, once it's not my things, I'm going to hang what you do, whatever you want. So then it would also be pretty clear that if my intent is to usur my things on you, that once they're not my things, then they're not usur on you. How about if I specify? Forget about, these are questions of what did I mean? How about if I specify? Could I actually, do I have the wherewithal of ossering something that is currently mine even after it's Yotzei Mirshusi? So that if I specify, I mean to make it similar to the idea of Hegdash. This is osser on you, Kehegdash, and therefore it will always be osser on you, Kehegdash, even if I sell it to somebody else. Now that's a question of how we view the relationship of Nidrei Isser to Nidrei Hegdash. And this has been very much a recurrent theme throughout the Masechet and part of the Machlokas of the Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and the issue regarding Pidyon, regarding Me'ila, and even regarding how you make a neder in the first place, the Machlokas between the Rishayim. This is very, very much a part of the nature of neder itself. And that's the reason that everybody understands that the issues of Nidrei Hegdash and Nidrei Isser, even though they have different mesechtas, one is Mesechet Me'ilah, and also in Yonim in Erechim, and in Zvachim, the other is in Mesechet Nedarim. But nonetheless, we understand that there's very profound interrelated complications. Now, Rebbe, in his wonderful approach of having 13 different approaches to every Mishnah, leaves us suitably confused with every possible interpretation by relating the question in an even more complex way to to the Isser of Shvias. Okay, so now the question is, somebody answers a person on his things, and now those things become Hefker, because now it's Shemitah. So now can I go into his field and take the Paris, because they're no longer his, even though he answered those Paris before Shvias, now that it's Shvias, I have a right to go in and take them? Now, of course, that also comes along and involves us in more complications. Namely, if the Torah says that I'm allowed to eat his Paris during Shvias, does that include that I'm allowed to trespass his property? So if I'm allowed to trespass his property, then that would mean that his property is also Mufker, and that the Torah was Mafker the Paris, and that the Torah is Mafker the property. In which case, if he ossered his things on me, so even though normally when somebody is osser ba'ana on someone else, he's not even allowed to cut through his yard. Remember we said? That was the beginning of the parak, first Mishnah. So then maybe during Shemitah, I could, because it's no longer his. So, I mean, that involves now multiple questions. How much was the Torah mafkir? Was the person who ossered something able to be mafkirit when it leaves his rishos? What would be the way that the person would have to phrase what he said in order for it to be osur after it leaves his rishus? Could he say, my things? Well, then when they're not his things, they shouldn't be osur. Can he just say these things? Can he say specifically these things even after they leave my rishus? All of these questions are the questions that the Gemara is going to find hidden within the Mishnah that we introduced today, which, of course, as usual, goes out of its way in brilliant fashion to leave us completely in the dark as to what the halachas are about any of this, but definitely forces us to confront the various issues that I just raised. So here we take a Mishnah, and it looks pretty easy on the surface. It turns out we have no idea what it's talking about. Okay. So it's a mudder hana'a mechaviro lefnei shvi'it. Somebody asers hana'a. So then he is mudar. He can't go into this guy's field. He can't go into this guy's house. He can't go into his field. Well, obviously. And he cannot eat his peirot even when they are notot. So even if they're hanging out over the street and he doesn't have to go into the guy's house or rishus, he still is not allowed to eat it because they're his. This isn't clear at all, because it might mean if somebody is mudar hana mechavero, then before shvius enu yori the toksa deyove enu ochel man hanotot, which is of course, and then when it becomes shvius, then enu yori the toksa deyo. Well, that would be a chiddush, that even though maybe the Torah was mafkir, I would have thought, he can't go into this chosodah, but he can eat minan d'tiyot. But it might also mean, uba shvi'it, if he was mudar hana'a, because the neder was made during shvi'it, but if the neder had been made before shvi'it, so then even during shvi'it, it would still be osur. Maybe that would be the meaning of the first part of the mission, you see. Uba shvi'it, if he, not when shvi'is arrives, but ba shvi'it, if he made that neder during shvi'it, then even though you'd think he could even go into his field, no, he can't go into his field, but he can eat from hanotot. Take out the word netiot, which is very, very mate. It's not even netiot. Netiot are generally osur anyway by definition, because the word netiot would mean that they're orla. So don't forget about netiot. So ochel min hanotot. Nadar hemenu ma'achal lifnei shvi'it. Now this is mudar hana'a. How about if he was madir eating? So then he's allowed to go, as we saw in the first Mishnah, into his property, but he cannot go and eat anything. Whereas in Shvias, he would be able to go into his property, and he would be allowed to eat also. Again, it's not clear what this means. Neder during Shvias, or Shvias arrives. So now we will see that there seems to be a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel on the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish on the other hand, that is built around how to understand the Mishnah. However, turns out at the end that we made a lot of assumptions when we assumed that we're talking about the machlokas between them being based on how to understand the Mishnah. But since we've learned the Mishnah, you know, we tend to see everything in that context. Okay, we have now the Machlokas Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. So let's see how they seem to be interpreting the Mishnah separately. So Rav and Shmuel, they say like this. Somebody asers nechasim elu, these particular nechasim. Now, it should say nechasai elu, or just nechasai, as the Bach changes it, because we'll see that the way the Rishonim talk about it, it's even in terms of where he says, my nechasim. Okay, this itself is a big machlokas. So we will assume at this point that the gears that we have, where it says nechasim elu alecha, should be an iser on the nechasim themselves, even when they're not in my own rishos. These nechasim. So lifnei shviit eino yored tov sadeu ve'eino ochel man hanotot. Af al pi shehigia shviit. Aha. So they seem to be learning the Gemara, the Mishnah, like this. If the person defined the nechasim not in terms of himself, that the deal is that even though the Torah was mafker these peres, since at the time that he was made the neder they were his, that iser would be chal even during shvius. So then the way to read the Mishnah, according to them, is uba shvius, not if the neder was made during shvius, when shvius arrives. So that's the point. In which case, what's the Mishnah telling us? It's telling us two very important kedushim. So first it tells us that a neder made before shvius remains in effect even after shvius arrives. And the Seifa teaches us that if the neder was made during shvius, then even though I don't own the peres and I can't asur the peres on you because they're not mine, I can still asur you from coming into my field, even though you have to get into my field in order to get the peres that the Torah said you could get. So how could I asur you from coming into my field? We'll have to discuss why that's possible, but it's certainly a big chiddush. So that would mean that even in the event that I didn't specify, nonetheless, it would be chal after shvius comes. That's the way we understand them now that they're talking about the mission. So this is im b'shviit nadar, eino yored tov sadeu, aval ochel man hanotot, because the person can't aser perot shviit, because they're not his to aser. Whereas, Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish da'amre tavayu, that in the event that he said nechasai alecha, then if he said my nechasim are aser, lifnei shviit, eino yored tov sadeu, ve'eino ochel man hanotot. So what they seem to be saying is that a person, now this is very, very weird, because, I mean, here it's, they specified, nechasai, my nechasim, which seems to be saying that Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish are stressing that only in the event that you said my nechasim, that then when shvius comes, there'd be no problem. But if he would have said these nechasim, there would have been a problem. For some reason, the Gemara ignores that difference. Now we'll talk about that separately. Let's pretend that right now we're not sensitive to the difference in the words nechasai elu or nechasim elu. We'll pretend. Okay, so what Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are saying is that if you asked something before shvius, then obviously before shvius he can't take them. Eino yored tov sadeu ve'eino ochel min hanotot. If shvius arrives, then it's no longer his. So higia shviit, eino yored tov sadeu, aval ochel hu et hanotot. So in other words, we are assuming right now, this is how the Ran understands the sugya. We are assuming that both Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are coming to explain the Mishnah. Okay, so Rav and Shmuel explain the Mishnah, is telling me two very big chiddushim, that even though when I asserted it, it was before Shvius, and I didn't say that it would be usser all the time, the moment that I defined it before Shvius, it remains usser even after Shvius. That's one chiddush. And even when I asser it during Shvius, I still can answer the guy from coming into my field. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, on the other hand, they say, no, there's no two cases over here. It's not that if you made the neder during Shvius. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish are saying like this, I made the neder before Shvius. And what they're saying is that this neder itself has two different dinim. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Not that Shvius means if I make the neder during Shvius, but Shvius means if Shvius comes along and happens. And therefore, what it's saying is, the first part of the Mishnah is saying just an introductory statement. It's obvious to all that if a person makes a neder, he could prevent a person from eating his field and entering his field. Well, that's a given, but I'm just introducing the case. But what happens when Shvius comes along? Then can you go in? Ah, yes. You can eat during Shvius, but you're still not allowed to go in. Why? Because for some reason, the dinim of Shvius are not matter you in the sense that his sada does not become hefker. Now, why that's true, we don't know. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. But according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, there's one case in the Mishnah. Before Shvius, the neder is chal, which is very obvious. It's not teaching you a darn thing, but it's an introduction. And when Shvius comes along, it's only partially matir. It's only matir you to eat, and it's not matir you to go in at all. All right? Very nice. Now, the peirot, on the other hand, are mutter because the Torah was mafka the Shvius. And even though you made the neder while the peirot were yours, and while it was still not Shvius, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish hold that a person cannot, this is what we assume, a person cannot answer something that is in his rishus now for after it leaves his rishus. Now, obviously, if you analyze the way that the neder was phrased, you'd have to be crazy to jump to this conclusion, right? You'd think. I mean, if there's clearly meant to be a difference between saying my things or these things, so then why in the world would Rabbi Yochanan or Reish Lakish be arguing about the Mishnah? Why aren't they just talking about different cases? That's really weird. But this is what we're assuming now. Now let's go and understand why that was pashut.
But please do finish that drink. Rabbi was right on target.
I didn't drink?
No. That's what happens. Rabbi holds the bottle and then your yikes. That was the shtaglos. He brought the medicine to his lips and said, that's enough, you know, from those stories.
Maybe that would explain why I don't lose any weight after buying that beautiful bicycle. All right. So now, how do we understand Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish? That even though the Reisha is meaningless, because it's not telling us anything at all, but it's an introduction to the case that making it very clear, listen, it's before Shvius, the neder was chal, and you think that that would influence things once Shvius? Nope. Doesn't influence anything. The food becomes completely mutter afterwards. And that's the whole point of the Mishnah. To teach that I shouldn't say it's the whole point of the Mishnah. There's an additional point that's a side point, which is that when Shvius is matir, the food, it's nonetheless not matir you to go into the field, which doesn't even make sense, but that's what it said. Now, why would we think such a thing if the difference is in the way that it's phrased, right? Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish say the case is nechasai. How do we learn from there that if you would have said these nechasim, not nechasai, these nechasim, I mean, you want to teach me a chiddush that you can't ask for something after it leaves your rishus, say these nechasim, not my nechasim, because it would be easy to understand. Well, of course, you said my nechasim as soon as it is not your nechasim. So then at that point, you are not intending to answer it. But that doesn't mean you couldn't answer it if you would have said these nechasim. So what Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, if we are correct, that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are coming goofy to tell me this halacha, you do not have the theoretical power to answer something that is not in your rishus, even though it currently is in your rishus. So then, for God's sake, say so. Say, even when you said, these nechasim, it will not make any difference. But to try to teach that Chiddush when you say my nechasim, that's weird. Why would we say such a thing? So this is a big problem in this Havamina. Why did we think that? That even if you say nechasim elu, what about if you say beferish? I want these to be usher even during Shvius, or even if I sell them. Would that also mean that I do not have the theoretical capability of ushering something? That's the way we now understand Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In which case, the way that they came to teach their halacha is the most ridiculous way imaginable. Because there's three levels to teach the Chiddush, right? I could say, my nechasim before Shvius, and then Shvius comes along. I could say, these fruit before Shvius, and then Shvius comes along. I could say, these fruit, whether they are mine or whether they're hefker, they're always us on you, and then Shvius comes along. Now, if Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are trying to tell me the big Chiddush that I do not have the theoretical possibility of ushering something unless it is mine, and that the entire kayach of a neder to create that virtual reality, even though I'm learning it from the Drei Hekdesh, does not mean that it's similar to Hekdesh in that a state of Isser is created by the Torah on this person, even though it's not in my Rishus. It's merely that I have the rights, of which are an extension of concepts of ownership, that I have the right to define the meaning of that ownership. And it can even mean that for you, this is totally out of reach. But when the ownership isn't there, I can't do anything. So then the way to explain that is to say, even if you did your darndest to answer that, even if you said, I don't want you to ever have any hanof from this, even if I die, even if I sell this, even if the Torah is mafkir it, it ain't going to help. But what Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish said is the worst possible way to try to give me over that concept, right? And this is a very profound concept. I mean, it's a completely different take on how Nedarim work. Because if you hold that once you make a neder, it's always going to answer the thing, and it doesn't matter whether it's yours, it doesn't matter whether the Torah was mafkirit, so then you're saying that the neder is actually a state that the Torah puts onto the thing, and it's not a derivation of your ownership. The same way you cannot make something hegdish if it isn't yours, you cannot make something usher with a neder if it isn't yours. You're concentrating way too much, Baruch Avram. That's called Rebarnea concentration format. You're in deep danger at any moment now of keeling over. You know, we don't want you to bust your nose or anything. So why? Thank heavens you're mute. Nobody hears your cursing. So now the question is, why in the world would Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have said that in that way, and the Gemara should still think that that's what they're trying to say? It doesn't make sense at all. That's the big problem with the Ran's approach to the sugya. So the Ran says, I'll tell you why. Even though Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish spoke about the case where the guy specifically mentioned Nichasai, is because if you're going to say that according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that there would be a difference between Nechasim Elu. So let me ask you, how do I explain the Mishnah? Remember, it's all about the Mishnah. Now, that's an assumption that turns out not to be true. But remember that at this point, we're assuming it's all about the Mishnah. So if it's all about the Mishnah, can you explain to me what the Chiddush of the Mishnah is? So far, the way we've explained the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that the opening of the Mishnah teaches us absolutely nothing. The opening of the Mishnah is just a way to make it very clear. You can asur something if it's in your Rishus. So if it's not Shvius yet, then it's going to be asur. The guy can't walk into your field. The guy can't eat your pears and so on. But, this is the Chiddush of the Mishnah. But in the moment that Shvius comes along, even though you were attempting to asur it after Shvius, you can't. Aha. Okay, fine. That's a big Chiddush, and that's coming to tell me the opposite of Rav Shmuel. But, obviously, it can't be the Chiddush where you said, only while it's in my Rishus, then it's not teaching you anything, right? So even though the words appear in Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's Nichasai, they cannot mean that. Because if that's what it means, then forget about the Mishnah. We should just cancel the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah is not teaching you a darn thing. The first part of the Mishnah teaches you zero. The second part of the Mishnah teaches you zero. Because you said it's only usher as long as it's nechasai. So obviously, if it's not nechasecha, then if it's shvius, why shouldn't you be allowed to eat it? So why are we talking about this Mishnah? Oh, you're going to tell me, we need this whole big, long, fancy Mishnah to tell me that if it's shvius, you still can't go into his field. Oh, come off it. So for that, we need this big, complex thing? That's a din in Shemitah. What's it doing in the Dorim, for heaven's sake? It doesn't belong in the Dorim. Say in Shemitah that Afa Pishat Peres Asurim and Mutarim, the Sada is Asur, which is not even true. But if that's the Kiddush, let it say that Kiddush. You cannot explain this Mishnah in the Dorim if you honestly believe that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were coming to speak about the Mishnah, and then they won't explain the Mishnah in terms of Nechasai. That's nuts. So obviously they meant Nechasim Elu, which of course the question is, so why didn't they say so? I mean, even though they say Nechasai, they really mean Nechasim Elu. Ah, that's because, you see, they are talking back to Rav and Shmuel. That's why. And they are trying to say that, no, my dear friends, you said that in the case of these nechasim, right? That's what you said. In the case where it says these nechasim, then they would be usher even after shvias. Let me tell you something. Saying these nechasim is exactly the same as saying nechasai. That's the point. And therefore, obviously, they're putting it that way just to smack Rav and Shmuel in the face, so to speak. Get out of here. What are you talking about? Nechasim Elu will be Aser after Shvias. Even if they said Nechasim Elu, it's never going to be any different than Nechasai, because that's the only thing that you can do is Aser your thing while it is yours. That's the point. And there's no other point, because otherwise the Mishnah will make no sense. Okay, this is what we assume right now. Is the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and therefore, what are they arguing in? Leima b'alka miflegei, Rav and Shmuel hold something foundational, different in the very essence of neder than Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Namely, Rav and Shmuel hold a person is capable of answering something that is currently in his rishus, so that it creates a state of Isser, similar to the din of Hegdash, in which even when it leaves his Rishos, that state remains, because that state is not an aspect of his ownership. Whereas the Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish hold, no, Nedarim are always an extension of your mind and your virtual reality, which you have a right as part of the concept of ownership, of asserting over something that's yours. The moment it goes out of your rishus, so does all of your imaginary beliefs about this thing disappear into thin air. And it's as if someone turned off the switch, and now I don't see anything about this that's usher. Correct, because it was all imaginary. It was this guy's attempt to assert the meaning over his ownership. You see how profound this is in terms of the interrelationship of Nedarim Bechlal. It's the interrelationship of Nedarim with Nashim as well. Why it's over here? It's all part of the relationship that you have to the object. And we give some sense of objective, this concept of relationship, which, as I've pointed out many times, the word for ownership in Hebrew is the same word for intercourse, which is crazy. But it's not crazy at all, because the idea, this is expressed even in English, but only for living objects, which we call husbandry, which are over there, there's an idea of taking care of something. It's on the animals in your shoes, which even in English, you relate back to the story of Gan Eden and the relationship of husbandry to animals, right? But here, it would mean that we're extending, and we have, by the way, we meet this very often, the chamor of Reb Pinchas ben Yair, the chamor of Reb Chanina ben Deisa, in which the chamor acts as if it's an extension of the individual who owns it. so that if that individual is machmer on himself, so you could joke around about the, well, this chamor is very machmer on itself. What do you want? It's not going to eat things that aren't meiser, even though it was for a behemah and there was no chiyah, and so on and so forth. It's humorous, but it's real because it takes on the very aspect of the owner. I told you there's even shitas that hold that if the owner becomes Jewish, the chamor becomes Jewish. That means that if the owner goes to the mikveh as part of a gerut, so then he doesn't have to be toivel his kelim, because the kelim also became Jewish. When he went to the mikveh, the kelim went to the mikveh. It's actually a psak like that, right? So that's like this ultimate extension of your presence in the things that you own. So that baalut is never seen as it is in Western context as just numbers on an Excel sheet. It has to do with an object specifically. We spoke about this and I wrote about it in terms of Mishpatim and so on, the concept of interest and the chule. Okay, so then it would turn out that we have this amazing machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and Rav and Shmuel, which would be fantastically interesting. So that according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, Ein Adam Osir Davar Shebirshuto, Kishiyetse Mirshuto. Says the Gemara, we cannot accept that explanation. Why? Because there's no such thing. Nobody could possibly hold that Ein Adam Osir Davar Shebirshuto L'Kishiyetse Mirshuto. That if a person wants to answer something that goes out of his rishus, he can't? That's what you're saying? He can't? Because nobody would hold that, and I'll prove it to you, okay? First of all, assuming that such a thing is true, I mean, don't you think that since the fundamental issue is to bring that truth out, that it would be a little silly for Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish to use the kind of words just to get under the skin of Rav and Shmuel and to say, Nechasim, Nechasai, that's the same thing as the chassai. Oh, come off it. Man, if I'm trying to tell you a foundational, this is the biggest yesod, I'm going to use the wrong word? You should have said nechassim elu. Then obviously, kosher came to the chassai. Okay, fine. I know your kvetchy explanation that they went, so then I'll prove it to you that even you are going to have to agree, all right? It's a Mishnah. Atnan. The Mishnah says beferish. Adam oser davar shebirshuto l'kishiyetse mirshuto. And I'll prove it to you in a way that is absolutely inarguable. We're going to have this later on. You say, a man says to his son, konam sh'ata neneli, Nate yirashenu. So a man says to his son, everything that I own, I asr on you with a neder. When he dies, the son inherits him, and now it's his, like anything else. But what if he says beferish to his child, everything that I own remains usher to you after my death, you bum? What about then? So then if he says bechayav uvemoto, so then he made lo yirashena. That doesn't mean literally lo yirashena. Obviously, you can't change the fact that it's now owned by the son because the Torah gave it to him. But lo yirashena means he's not going to be able to relate to it the way he would normal people relate to Yerusha, that it's theirs, that they can use it. Over here, it's theirs, but it's as if it's Hekdesh. They can't use it. So what are you telling me, for heaven's sakes? What are you telling me? That there's a foundational machlokas about whether it's possible to answer something that is not in Yerusha's. That's absurd. Nobody's going to argue on the Mishnah. So you made this big deal, this big presentation, change the language, assume it's going on the Mishnah, did everything crazy, because you forgot to take into consideration a Mishnah? There is no such man d'amar, all right? So forget about that. Well, I mean, maybe it's different because he said, b'chayav uvemoto. I mean, you know, I understand that this is a special case. Now, obviously, you don't understand very much because even if it's a special case, it certainly is no longer the big primal question, which was, can you or can't you? If you're telling me, well, you can, but you have to specify. Fine. So you have to specify. So then that could have been the machlokas. But you're not getting away with your crazy pshat over here by admitting that Well, you're right, but over here he said so. Okay, fine, so he said so. So now that explains anything to you? It still doesn't explain anything. So obviously this is not a way of getting out of the issue. That's for sure. Now, again, we understand that if I'm answering something on myself, it's up to me. I can answer something on myself that's not mine. So over there, if I say to you, this house is usher on me, that's fine. I'm ready to accept that. Even if you sell the house, it's usher on me because it has nothing to do with your ownership. But over here, I would have thought that the netter per se, the power of a netter, making the netter, is a function of your ownership. And that's what we were assuming that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were saying. Now we're saying, well, there might be a difference in that if I'm ossering this house on me, fine. So then it's osser whether it remains in your rishus, it doesn't remain rishus. But if I'm trying to osser something on somebody else, then I need to specify. And I need to say that even after my death and so on, it will still be osser on you. Okay, but now this means that we've changed our mind. In other words, we're now saying, all right, all right, all right, we made a mistake. There is no such fundamental machlokas, 100%. And if a person would have said beferish, that he means it even after Tzatzim Rishosai, so then, of course, he is empowered to such a thing. I'm ready to agree to that. So now, okay, if he just said Nechosim Elu, so then it would only have meant when it's still in his Rishos. So I could still learn that, right? Because if in this case all he said was the Nechasim Elu. So we could have said that, but I mean, then the point is once again, so what is the Chiddush? If you're telling me that it's possible for the person to actually answer something on himself, so then we're left with the same question. So again, why did the Reisha of the Mishnah say nothing and the Seifa of the Mishnah say nothing? What's the Chiddush? If the point is that he used the wrong language and that he really could have answered it, so then I don't understand. So then the Mishnah's not telling me anything about Shviyas when it goes out of his Rishus. You see, we excused the whole Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish originally because it was saying a massive Chiddush. Even though the first part was only an introduction, of course you can answer something when it's in your Rishus. But don't think that it's possible to answer it when it goes out of your rishus. Oh, wow, bang. But now you're saying, well, you used the wrong language. Oh, for God's sakes. And that has nothing to do with the discussion. So what are you telling me? That if your intent was never to answer something after it leaves your rishus because you didn't say so, so then guess what? When it leaves your rishus, it's mutter. Thank you very much. What a brilliant Mishnah. That you have a right to make a netter and answer something. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Oh, what a brilliant Kiddush. I'm already halfway through Masechet Nedarim, and you're coming to tell me I can answer something with a netter. Wow. Good thing I didn't know this at the beginning. I would have fainted dead away. And then you're telling me the brilliant Kiddush in the last part of the Mishnah is that if you said it's only us or while it's yours, when it isn't yours, it's mutter. That's insane. So you're not answering anything. So then says the Gemara, mikom makom kashanu. So we're back to the question. I mean, then why didn't they argue about a case that would have made sense? Let them say where he said beferish, where it is mine or where it isn't mine. Then you would have had a Mishnah that was telling you a Kiddush. But the way that you're saying it now is absurd. So, mikoma komkasha, I don't understand, but lemaisa, does this make sense? So can we please recalibrate, okay? I want to understand once again. The machlokas between Rav and Shmuel on the one hand and Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish on the other hand is about what? Okay, I still have no idea what is going on. I mean, if we're still trying to fit into the Mishnah. Okay. Here's what I'm trying to tell you. If you would have said, these nechasim, everybody agrees. Kuleyam alo plige, these nechasim, that for sure is even if it's out of his rishus. You don't have to specify b'chayai, b'moti. You said these nechasim, they're ossering them in all cases. Where is there a machlokas? Only if he said nechasai. So Rav and Shmuel hold that I don't care what language you use, whether you say nechasim elu, or you say nechasai. It doesn't matter, because once the person asers something, it still is usher even if they're not his. Because even though he stipulated nechasai, nechasai was just a way of identifying, my things are usher. You want a list of my things? Here's a list of my things. But that doesn't mean only when they're my things, you idiot. Of course, I just want you not to get any hanah from as much as I could possibly usher on you. So here's the list. Okay, so I'm making it easy without giving a list, saying anything that I own, you want my Excel sheet? Fine. But it doesn't mean only when they're mine. That's all that they're saying. So Rav and Shmuel are saying the word nechasai doesn't mean only when there are nechasai. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish says that no, if you say these nechasai, fine, then Adam Oser. But if you just say nechasai, then you really mean only while they are mine. The moment they go out of mine, then they're no longer going to be usher. That's what we understand now. And therefore, the Mishnah, we're not going to be able to explain it this way, right? We're not going to be able to say that if the guy comes along and he says, nechasai, that then it's over on Shvias. Because again, like we said, there's no chiddush in that. If the word nechasai bedafka means not. So now we would have to say that Mishnah is talking about a case that says nechasim elu, and therefore the reish of the Mishnah that says that if I said nechasim elu, then it's usher even when it is shvius. And then the next case would be talking about a neder which I did make on shvius. And there it's telling me the chiddush that I still can't go into the guy's rishus. Okay. Much less of a powerful explanation. Yeah, but it still doesn't work, says the Gemara. Because nobody holds that. What you're saying is that Rav and Shmuel hold, it doesn't matter if you say nechasim elu, or it says nechasai. Well, I got news for you. There's a Beferish Mishnah just a few daf away that says exactly not like that. Hatznan, listen to the Mishnah. Ha'omer l'chavero, konam l'toch beitcha shani nichnas, satcha shani lokeh. I'm not allowed to go into your house. I'm not allowed to buy your field. Mate, or shemachro la'acher, mutar. If this guy dies or gave it away, then he can. But if he said, I'm not going to go into this house, I'm not going to buy this field ever, then even if he gave it to somebody else, it is, of course, no longer going to be mutar because he specified this house. So that's saying that there's obviously a difference in the language. So now, how can Rav and Shmuel say there's no difference how you say it? Here it's saying that there is a difference how you say it. And I understand that you'd want to say there's a difference if you're the Madir or if you're the Mudar. But the bottom line is that the Mishnah is explaining that this language is very important to recognize. And therefore, we're going to have to come up with a completely new explanation about the Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and Rav and Shmuel. And guess what the explanation is? That there is no Machlokas Reish Lakish with Rav and Shmuel. It was all imaginary. They're talking about two different cases. Then they weren't coming to argue about understanding the Mishnah at all. Therefore, since we can no longer say that they're arguing, Eleki Amre Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the only case of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish we're referring to is where you said nechasai, and therefore it doesn't become usher after it's not nechasai. And Rav and Shmuel said, where are we talking about you can usher? Where you say nechasim elu? Thank you. Velo pligi. Everybody's agreed. Now we can have a l'chaim, and things are wonderful. Richie's ready to give us something to drink even. Akol b'seder. And therefore there never was a machlokas all along. The Mishnah is talking about a neder that's talking about nechasim elu, and therefore it is going to be chal during Shemitah. And the second part is talking about a neder made during Shemitah, not that Shemitah comes along. And therefore, Rav and Shmuel were talking about completely different things than Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were talking about. Rav and Shmuel were just telling me, you want to look at this Mishnah? This Mishnah is talking about where you said nechasim elu. Yes, it's Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, of course, 100%. But I want to make it very clear that if you had said nechasai, So then that would mean that on Shvius you would be allowed to do it. That's all. Now, you say, but Shvius eino yor l'tok sadeo. I don't understand. You're allowed to eat his fruit. It says you can eat the fruit that's hanging out onto the street, as long as you don't have to go into his field, right? Why are you allowed to do that? Because it's hefker. But then if that's the case, if the Torah said you're allowed to go into another person's field to take his food, so then how is there a difference? And if you're, what you're trying to tell me, the Torah doesn't allow you to go into his field, but somehow or other, the pears are hefker. Thank you very much. So how am I supposed to get them? No, you're not supposed to get them. It's a theory. That's crazy. Obviously, the whole idea of Shvius is that people could go in and take the pears. Something's wrong. So then why isn't the land mutter too? Omar Ula. Ula says, because the Mishnah is talking about cases where there are no tot. And it means that the trees are all able to be reached from the outside. And therefore, since it isn't necessary to go into the field, you should not go into the field where the Torah wasn't specifically matured, because you could still get the fruit from the outside. That's what it's asking. Reb Shimon ben Oyakim says, no. The truth is that even though midiraisa, of course you can go into the field. This is a gzera derabbanan. Gzera shema yisheba amida. We're concerned that the guy is going to go into the other field. He's going to go take the peiros, and then he's going to see a friend of his, and he's going to say, oh, how's the wife? And meanwhile, they get into a whole discussion, and the guy's being over on his netter. The Torah didn't give you the right to go in to have a good wag. The Torah gave you a right to go pick the peiros and to get that guy out of there. So if you're going to be using his field as a place to hang out and talk to people, that is maddening to the owner, and of course is a violation of the mudr hanah.